BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Witnessing horror concentrates the mind.
The bus set off to cross the front lines at about 6:30 yesterday evening. The children were tied to the seats so that they wouldn't be thrown around by the rough roads along the way.
In Sarajevo, the besieged capital of Bosnia, in the summer of 1992, two very small Bosnian children were killed when a bus that was supposed to take them to safety was attacked.
Our cameraman took this picture of 13-month-old Rocky Sulemanovic just before he left the bus as it approached no man's land.
I travelled with them until they were about to enter territory controlled by the Bosnian Serbs, who had the city surrounded.
A few minutes later, Rocky and Vedrana Glavas, a three-year-old girl, were killed by the sniper.
All the evidence suggested that the Serbs pulled the trigger. The bodies of the dead children, Rocky Sulemanovic and Vedrana Glavas, were brought back to the mortuary, where the BBC cameraman filmed their tiny bodies. I couldn't face going in, which was gutless. Killing Vedrana and Rocky was a war crime. A couple of days later, I reported from the funeral.
A war is made up of thousands of acts of cruelty. Another one was heading straight for them.
The Serbs shelled the cemetery, trying to kill the mourners.
As the family was leaving, the gunners found their range.
Children who were laying flowers had to hide behind gravestones. I was outraged. It was barbaric, and I wanted to say so on the television news. Then I remembered I was a journalist, not an activist. I thought it would be much more powerful just to show and say what had happened.
At least six mortar rounds landed in or around the graveyard. There were two direct hits just at the time that the children's funerals were due to start.
I think of that moment often when I'm faced with more human barbarity. Journalism can mean pushing your way into people's lives at their worst moments. Without a good reason, it's tourism or war porn. In the evenings, in the gloomy and battered hotel we stayed in a few hundred yards from the front line, we journalists would listen to the sounds of the war outside and wonder what the point was of what we were doing. It certainly wasn't stopping the war. In these programs, I'm taking you to some of the most difficult stories I've ever had to report, and to the obstacles that stand between journalists and the truth. In this episode, is it enough to report it straight, as I did that day in the Sarajevo graveyard? Is it possible to be a journalist and an activist? I'm Jeremy Bowen. This is Frontlines of Journalism, Episode 3, All for Nothing. In Sarajevo, I worked alongside Sabina Čosić, a young woman who was swept up by the war. We hadn't talked about the war for years. In lockdown, she sent me bread-making tips.
I became a bourgeois cliché during lockdown, learning how to make sourdough bread. Let us talk about that time when you and I were in Sarajevo.
Yes.
There wasn't a great deal of bread around, as I remember.
Whatever was around was pretty bad.
I remember, not that I smoked, but those cigarettes that were tobacco rolled in bits of old books.
Yes.
Sabina worked with the Reuters news agency, learning journalism on the job with their star war reporter, Kurt Schork. He was with me in the cemetery as it was being shelled.
Hurry up.
Kurt took charge of the first aid.
Get the woman's daughter.
Eventually, they became a couple, and Sabina had left journalism for banking by the time Kurt was killed, along with another friend from Sarajevo, Miguel Gil, a Spanish cameraman, in an ambush in Sierra Leone in 2000.
To go back to that time in the early 1990s in Sarajevo, how then did you get to the truth?
We reported on the daily atrocities. We made daily visits to the city morgues. It was one of my daily duties. I actually had to count the bodies.
Yeah, well, you did it so we didn't have to, because I went with your totals.
The wars caused by the collapse of Yugoslavia started in 1991 and went on for almost a decade. Sarajevo was besieged by Bosnian Serb forces for 3 years, from the spring of 1992.
From the local population, there was a lot of hope. People took us into their homes. People showed us the damage. People showed us their wounds, precisely because they had this huge hope that if the world saw, then the world would react.
I found that as time went by, that argument washed less and less. I remember trying to use that argument probably to persuade someone to talk. And that person said, you know, 2 years ago I might have done it, but now it's clear no one's going to come and help us, so why don't you go and get lost? I don't think he said get lost.
True. It did wear thin. The intervention in 1995 came far too late. But if it wasn't for all those persistent journalists, I really wonder if we would have had an intervention at all. What percentage of the decision was because of the reports, I don't know. But it couldn't have been all for nothing.
The lesson I took away from those dead children whose funeral was shelled was that my job as a reporter was to document the truth. No one would be able to make the excuse that they hadn't known what was happening. I am not an activist or a campaigner.
Hello.
Good morning, George.
The writer and environmental activist George Monbiot won one of the most prestigious awards in journalism in 2022.
You've won the Orwell Prize for Journalism, but you're also known as an activist. So what are you, an activist or a journalist?
I can't disentangle them. Any meaningful activist is going to be informed by an empirical assessment of what's going on. I get that through my work in journalism.
Is journalism wasted if it's not activism?
I don't think any enhancement of human knowledge is a waste, but we do have, I feel, a moral duty to turn what we know into ethical change. Otherwise, we become spectators at disaster. We become bystanders, rubberneckers.
At the beginning of 2021, I did some more reporting in Bosnia, which has never recovered properly from the war. In an interview with the BBC presenter, Rita Chakrabarty, I said that Western governments, not least Britain's, should have done more to stop the killing in the 1990s. Off air, Rita said, "That's interesting. I bet you couldn't have said that at the time." Back then, I thought we had. But maybe the constraints of reporting impartiality meant I pulled back from drawing the appropriate conclusion. Maybe I should have been clearer. Douglas Hurd, then the British Foreign Secretary, thought we said too much.
Douglas Hurd referred to people sitting in the Holiday Inn in Sarajevo, I suppose he meant people like you or me, as the something must be done club. And he did not mean that in a very favourable way.
I think we were being accused of advocacy, no?
My particular view of impartiality is that it's a question of putting your own deeply held beliefs, perhaps, to one side and trying to work out what's true and what isn't.
Yes, I take exactly the same position.
George Monbiot.
But then I take that a step further and say, having determined what is currently true, we should act on that knowledge.
We may have a similar view of impartiality, but not only am I not a campaigner, if I try to be one, I might get fired.
Yeah, well, that is one of the reasons I no longer work for the BBC.
I really didn't like the lionization. I was very seriously worried about that.
Michael Burke, BBC television correspondent in South Africa in the 1980s, was expelled by the apartheid regime and he filed searing reports from the famine in Ethiopia.
Because you did that piece, when was it, 84?
Mm.
It was my first year at the BBC.
Mm.
And the number two on the 6 o'clock news came in and said to us, "We've got a big thing on tonight from Ethiopia, you should all watch it." So we did.
Dawn. And as the sun breaks through the piercing chill of night on the plain outside Koram, it lights up a biblical famine, now in the 20th century.
Of course, it made a massive impact, set off the whole Band-Aid, Live Aid. What was your concern about it? Because it seemed to be quite a good outcome.
Oh, a terrific outcome. But my concern was I didn't want to be seen as a campaigner. And the reason I didn't want that was I wanted people to believe what I said.
Death is all around. A child or an adult dies every 20 minutes.
He's not just saying that in order to raise awareness and money for Oxfam or Save the Children Fund. I wanted people to think, well, that's as close to the truth as he's able to get.
I asked George Monbiot if he ever felt a conflict
between being a journalist and an activist.
What if you were investigating something, I don't know, big oil, and you found some detail that actually helped them, even if it's a company you were against? Would you just ignore that? Or would you say, actually, I found this stuff, it doesn't quite fit in with what I agree with, but that's the way it is?
That's exactly what I did with nuclear power. I had been adamantly anti-nuclear for many years. You sometimes have to break with the consensus that surrounds you, even if you help to create that consensus. And as usual, I lost a load of friends.
You don't regret that?
I think our loyalty must be to the truth.
Not everyone wants journalists to find out the truth. Accusing them of being campaigners is one way to discredit what they're trying to do.
It's a disingenuous way of portraying journalists as biased, having an agenda. I mean, I remember Christiana Mampour was accused of advocacy all the time.
I was going to wear my my sweater branded with my mantra, which is be truthful, not neutral. And I learned this distinction during Bosnia.
Christiane Amanpour's reporting of the war in Bosnia did a lot to establish her as one of CNN's top correspondents.
I mean, it came to me because I actually got criticised. Christiane's a bit dodgy. It looks like she's siding with the Muslims because the victims, as you know, were Muslims. You know, we're there to do all sides of the story, but not to conclude that all sides are either morally equivalent or factually equivalent.
All sides did bad things.
Not in the least bit equivalent. No, you cannot go Jeremy.
Well, all sides did bad things, but it's degrees of bad things.
Yes, but I just will never equate aggressor with victim, ever. That's truth.
Truth is complicated. Finding it is hard, even when there's a clear aggressor. Both Christiane and I have spent a lot of time in Ukraine since the Russians invaded.
The echoes are really awful.
The echoes are awful. But I tell you, it's difficult stuff because if you look at Ukraine now, in a sense, it's more comfortable for journalists like us to be reflecting that truth because we're not getting any pushback from the government.
Yes.
Because they agree.
They do agree. And what we've learned is when the world wants to enter and do something, they don't push back on reports which tell them how bad it is.
Years after the siege of Sarajevo was lifted, I testified in four separate trials at the War Crimes Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. Many of my reports were submitted as evidence, including that piece from the funeral that was shelled. It was part of a mountain of evidence that helped put the Bosnian Serb leaders Radovan Karadzic and Ratko Mladic behind bars. Some journalists who, like me, had witnessed war crimes refused to testify as they felt it would undermine their journalistic objectivity or impartiality or whatever word they preferred. I talked about it with Sabina Čosić, my former Sarajevo colleague.
I do not see it as clashing with the role that the journalists play. You're being called as a witness to say what you've seen.
That feel that if there was a justification for the kinds of work that we did, if it brought offenders to book, it was okay to testify.
Correct.
It was good to see war criminals like Karadzic or Mladic in the dock. Putting them behind bars wouldn't bring their victims back to life, and it hasn't stopped others committing war crimes. But it was the best justice could do. Next time on Frontlines of Journalism.
Personal experiences are important and always existed. We just never really talked about them.
Is who we are yet another obstacle to the truth? Frontlines of Journalism is presented by me, Jeremy Bowen. The producer is Georgia Catt. The assistant producer is Sam Peach. Additional research by Rob Byrne. The series editor is Philip Sellers. Please rate and leave a review to help others find us.
Hi, I'm Helen Lewis, and I want to tell you about a podcast I've made for BBC Radio 4 and BBC Sounds. It's called The New Gurus, and it's about how everywhere you look on the internet, people are giving advice. Advice they claim will transform your life. Advice that gets them thousands, no, millions of devoted followers. These online prophets are telling us how to eat, how to think, how to get rich, how to find love, how to manage our time. These are the new gurus.
just as people will say the Protestant Reformation and the printing press went hand in hand, so too did this birth of the new internet culture really give rise to this new religious landscape.
Subscribe now to The New Gurus on BBC Sounds.